I think that silence is one of course, one of the ways in which we're controlled, one of the very effective implants by which we control ourselves. And it's something that each one of us individually and collectively will die of if we do not find a way to break it. And I've seen this come up over and over again in the women's movement, in the Black Power movement, in the lesbian movement, over and over again. Those questions that are acceptable can be asked. And always there is the tendency not to ask those that do not fit into a pattern.
Welcome back to another episode of the Unlearning Podcast. My name is Ashley Lynn Hanks. I am your host, your guide, and your biggest cheerleader on your unlearning journey. The Unlearning Podcast is all about helping you learn to love Jesus and your neighbor through healthy, life-giving Christian theology. For anyone new to the show, my name is Ashley, and I'm a Cuban-American lesbian from Miami, a graduate of Claremont School of Theology, a wife, a mother, and I live on Kumash Tanva land, currently known as Los Angeles. Now, I've been pretty absent from the podcast lately because I'm still adjusting to being a new mother. I have quickly learned that my time is not my own anymore, and that's a skill set of juggling sleep, caring for a child, work, and extra activities like this podcast. And so I'm learning those skills slowly, giving myself grace and just doing what I can. But while I've been taking care of my daughter, I've been learning a lot about Christian mysticism. And so after I get through this current series on sexuality, my goal is to do a series on Christian mysticism because I believe it will be a huge blessing to everyone and anyone trying to heal from evangelicalism and trying to practice a faith that is both healthy and life-giving. But before we get to all that, I want to spend the next couple of weeks unpacking this theme of renewing sex, of helping you form a sexual theology using Carter Hayward's work and Audre Lorde's essay, The Erotic as Power. To start us off on this new series, we're going to look at Lorde's essay and think through how her teachings can help us live more liberated and holistic lives. Now, in 1978, Black feminist lesbian Audre Lorde shared an essay that would eventually become a foundational piece of feminist literature. In her profound essay, Uses of the Erotic as Power, Lorde unpacks what it means to be reconnected to our deepest longings and desires. Now, I know what you're thinking, because I'm thinking it too. Whenever I hear the word erotic, I immediately think of sex and porn and Hollywood's obsession with sex sells. But that's not how Lorde or Hayward are using the term. In her essay, Audre Lorde wrote, and I quote, that pornography is a direct denial of the power of the erotic, for it represents the suppression of true feeling. Pornography emphasizes sensation without feeling, end quote. So let's remember that. Renewing sex is not about affirming or celebrating porn, but about being connected to our deepest longings and desires. It's about developing a more holistic theology, okay? Audre Lorde sees the erotic as, and I quote, a resource within each of us that lies in a deeply female and spiritual plane, firmly rooted in the power of our unexpressed or unrecognized feelings. It is a measure between the beginning of our sense of self and the chaos of our strongest feelings. It is an internal sense of satisfaction to which, once we have experienced it, we can know that we can aspire to it. For having experienced the fullness of this depth of feeling and recognizing its power, in honor and self-respect, we can require no less of ourselves. End quote. This is interesting. Lorde describes the erotic as a measure between the beginning of our sense of self and the chaos of our strongest feelings. It's like knowing what true love is, what it feels like to be loved unconditionally, passionately, and all-consumingly, and never allowing yourself to settle for anything less. Once you know what it feels like to connect with someone from your deepest emotional core and the joy of that connection, it is in a way disrespectful to go back to anything else. Outside of the sexual context, consider this. Once you have experienced the thrill of creating art or of living in a safe environment or the fulfillment of being connected to nature. It is almost like a self-abusive task to disconnect yourself from that. Lord described experiencing the erotic as an internal requirement toward excellence. I do not believe that Audre Lorde is calling women towards being excellent at work or in our relationships or behavior because she explains, and I quote, "The erotic is not a question only of what we do. It is a question of how we acutely and fully feel in the doing. Once we know the extent to which we are capable of feeling that sense of satisfaction and completion, we can then observe which of our various life endeavors brings us closest to that fullness. The aim of each thing we do is to make our lives and the lives of our children richer and more possible." The second part to that big quote by Lorde is that once we realize what makes our lives richer and more possible, once we realize who and what actions/activities bring us our fullest experience of pleasure, we become less tolerant of things that don't fulfill us. Now, this is a complicated idea for evangelical Christians. We are taught by the evangelical church that the way of Christ is the way of suffering, and that you are doing life right the more you suffer for Christ, the more you tolerate bad behavior at work, in your family, and in your marriage. Now, I'm sure you've heard it before, that we are never more like Christ than when we love our enemies, than when we love those who cannot love us back. Although well-meaning, this kind of thinking often leads to a theology of abuse, or more like an apologetics argument for justifying abuse in our lives. We have been taught to think that if a relationship requires grace, that this relationship is a gift from God, and that it's God's calling towards becoming like Jesus. Again, I believe this kind of thinking comes from a good place, but if we are not discerning, it can be terribly, terribly toxic. It is a good thing to aspire to live in harmony with others and to become a patient and tender person. I believe that Jesus was patient and tender and taught an ethic of peacemaking. But I do not believe it is a good thing to be patient and preferential at the expense of one's own emotional, mental, and physical well-being. The call to discipleship is not the call to endure injustice and abuse. Let me say that again. The call to discipleship is not the call to endure injustice and abuse. The call to discipleship is the pursuit of justice and the ending of abuse. The Christian God, even in the most conservative sense, is all about justice. Redemption through Jesus dying on the cross is rooted in a pursuit of justice with sin. The Mosaic Law was given to Moses to provide justice in the Israel of antiquity. We anticipate Jesus' second coming to balance the scales of justice. As I've mentioned before, bell hooks wrote that there can be no love without justice. So for God to invite people or demand that Christ's followers submit to and endure injustice, even in the most intimate of relationships, is ludicrous. The Christian life was never meant to be a crucifixion. Please remember that. The Christian life was never meant to be a constant crucifixion. God will never call you to enter and endure an abusive relationship or abide in any context where your health and well-being are consistently abused. I firmly believe that God calls us through our participation in community to pursue justice, to love mercy, and to walk tenderly with one another. These kinds of relationships are mutually empowering. I can imagine that mutuality is a new concept for a lot of people, especially if you're fresh out of the evangelical world. But don't allow its newness to distract you. Just hold on to this idea of mutuality and justice as we continue this series on developing a healthy sexuality. God did not create you to suffer endlessly in abusive and life-limiting relationships. Christ came that we should have life and have it abundantly. Anytime you are tempted to believe that God's call is to stay in hurtful and in abusive relationships, just remember that. Christ came that we should have life and have it abundantly. But what does it mean to have an abundant life, especially within the context of sex? Another amazing Black feminist activist who is deeply influenced by Audre Lorde's work is Adrienne Marie Brown. In her book, Pleasure Activism, Brown wrote, and I quote, "So many of us have been trained into the delusion that we must accumulate excess, even at the cost of vast inequality, in order to view our lives more complete or successful." Now, Brown's words remind me of the parable of the rich fool that stored everything in big barns. Jesus' parable was a picture of excess. Pursuing excess is ironically fruitless. It's a form of numbing. We numb ourselves with excess food, excess alcohol, excess sex. This isn't healthy. It leads to a bottomless appetite for more and endless dissatisfaction. This kind of delusion very much feeds our capitalist culture today. In her essay, Audre Lorde wrote about a split between the spiritual and the political. She explained that we have been taught by our society that the spiritual has no place and no connection with the political. In her book, Touching Our Strength, Carter Hayward centers Audre Lorde's same idea of this split within the Christian experience as being this split between the spiritual and the physical. Hayward believes that the church leaders have over-spiritualized Jesus in order to diminish the value of the physical, the dignity, and the holiness of being human. Audre Lorde sees this split as intentional as well, teaching us to focus on what we cannot see instead of what we do see, which is the political reality of our lives. I absolutely agree. These days, we are taught that being human is something to overcome. This is taught just as much in the larger culture through self-development books and in the militant masculinity of people like Tim Kennedy and Jocko and the Order of Man. This is taught in the larger world as much as it is in the evangelical churches. This toxic thinking is especially prevalent in Los Angeles, where women are expected to get Botox and change their faces to stay young, where an obsession with dieting and being thin occupies the minds of women. Men can grow old gracefully, but women should avoid growing older at all costs. Oddly enough, in the gay community, especially among gay men, this kind of thinking is prevalent where men are extremely occupied with looking youthful for the sake of staying sexually attractive. When we begin to see our bodies as holy and our deepest longings as from God, we begin to see the beauty of aging, of being our natural weight, of being who we really are. But the erotic is not just about your body. Lorde describes the function of the erotic as, and I quote, the power which comes from sharing deeply any pursuit with another person, end quote. I love this definition because I totally understand what she means. When I work on something, whether it be gardening or a passion project or a script I'm writing or the Christmas tree I decorated over the winter break with my wife and daughter, doing things I genuinely love with others who enjoy it as well, I am living in the erotic. What is deepest in me is empowering me to do the things I deeply love with other people. Opening myself up to my deepest yearnings doesn't mean that everything I do is going to feel amazing. I still have to take out the trash, brush my teeth, answer emails at work. Opening ourselves up to the erotic does not mean that we chase the emotional high all day long. It means we no longer tolerate the split. It means we pursue wholeness. We who are spiritual are also erotic and political. Our material political lives are deeply interconnected with our spiritual lives, and not one thing is more important than the other. Lorde explains that opening ourselves up to our deepest longings, to the power of the erotic, gives us, and I quote, a deep and irreplaceable knowledge of our capacity for joy. And it comes to demand from all of our life that it be lived within the knowledge that such satisfaction is possible and does not have to be called marriage, nor God, nor an afterlife. Let me repeat that. Having connected to our deepest cravings and having experienced this fearless capacity for joy, we have come to realize that such satisfaction is possible here and now, regardless of what you do and do not believe, and regardless if you're married or not. Lorde believed that our deepest cravings are rooted in acknowledging, listening to, and embracing the yes within ourselves. The yes to life, the yes to the erotic, the yes to open and fearless joy. Lorde wrote, and I quote, we have been raised to fear the yes within ourselves, to fear our deepest cravings. But once recognized, those which do not enhance our future lose their power. The fear of our desires keeps them suspect and indiscriminately powerful, for to suppress any truth is to give it strength beyond endurance. End quote. To suppress any truth is to give it strength beyond endurance. To suppress the truth about your sexuality, the truth about abuse, the truth about the joy you experience as a baker in order to work a dead-end job, to suppress any truth is to give it strength beyond endurance. take a moment to consider. What does it mean for you to embrace the yes in your life? Maybe it means doing the work of becoming a foster parent and fulfilling your deepest longing to be a father. Maybe it means embracing the joy of being in a romantic relationship with someone of the same sex or pursuing your art. Saying yes, embracing the yes within, allows us to be guided by our internal knowledge, our internal needs, and our intuition. This is a way of living from within outward, as Lord described it. Lord wrote that when we do this, we begin to be responsible to ourselves in the deepest sense. For as we begin to recognize our deepest feelings, we begin to give up, of necessity, being satisfied with suffering and self-negation and with numbness, which so often seems like the only alternative to our society. End quote. Oof, let me read that again. Lord wrote that when we do this, that when we say yes to ourselves, to the yes within you, we begin to be responsible to ourselves in the deepest sense. For as we begin to recognize our deepest feelings, we begin to give up out of necessity, being satisfied with suffering and self-negation, and with the numbness which so often seems like the only alternative in our society. End quote. I recently had dinner with a friend who genuinely believes that God calls her to dwell on the pain she unknowingly caused another person. The only way for her to not, quote unquote, sin this way again is to really dwell on how much she hurt the other person's feelings and disappointed them. Now, I'm all for learning from our mistakes, but too often evangelical shame-based thinking makes people feel unnecessarily guilty and unnecessarily responsible for the feelings and actions of others. In other words, evangelicalism often breeds codependency. And I don't believe that God is calling us to lead codependent lives. Feeling overly responsible for the feelings of others makes us unnecessarily preoccupied or obsessed with how other people are feeling and behaving, and it often leads to incredibly unhealthy attempts at controlling others. When I think about my own evangelical experience, I think back to all of the ways that I was taught to forgive and forget, to tolerate bad behavior from people. This kind of tolerance for pain, for abuse even, was a weird measure of spiritual maturity in conservative communities, even in non-religious spaces like business and work. But all this denying my feelings taught me to split myself in two. It's a mind over matter mentality that splits our mind from our bodies and permeates into every aspect of life, alienating us from ourselves and other people. I remember reading in my purple teen devotional Bible an excerpt about feelings and emotions and how we should not trust them because they can lead us to sin. Now, mind you, I spent the majority of my career working with adolescents. I understand the apprehension in encouraging teens to embrace the chaotic feelings within. Biologically, feelings and emotions are really big and loud at that age. But I have to wonder, how would my life have been different if I had been taught not to fear my deepest longings or the erotic within me, and not to fear the yes within me? Even as a teen, but if I was taught to encourage to embrace it, I'm sure I still would have made some mistakes in love and relationships, but I would have done so from a place of wholeness, from a place of spiritual and physical freedom. I think if I was raised that way, I would have developed into an adult who would have recognized toxic theology much, much sooner and had the strength to leave those churches much, much quicker. But I can't go back. I can't erase the religious trauma I received. All that I can do is begin the work of opening myself up to my yes, to my deepest cravings. I can do the work of healing the split through prayer and dialogue and unlearning. I can read Black feminist activists and feminist theologians and other liberation theologies that affirm my humanity and that teach me to embrace the truth. I hope that you found today's episode helpful. I know that's a lot to digest, but really just take the time this week to think about, what are your deepest longings and desires? What are you saying no to that you should really be saying yes? And in what ways are you justifying the suffering, your own suffering, in ways that are unnecessary? God has called you to live the abundant life. The abundant life was never meant to be a constant crucifixion. The abundant life looks very different for all of us. And so take some time to really think about that and to pray about that and to sit in stillness. What does the abundant life look for you? What do you need to say yes to? Until next time, thank you for joining me. My name is Ashley Lynn Hanks, and you are listening to The Unlearning Podcast.